Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you? Nah. You think that there'll be many of you? Nah. You really think they ready for you? Nah. You think they really ready for you? Nah. You think that there'll be many of you? Nah. You really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking, Chris, shrinking, nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking, honorary degrees from Lincoln, I cross borders like Mohicans and do albums in a weekend, I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling, I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking, them lies and them liars, I still make flyers, I still ride bands and say MC for hire, I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face, then you got them rappers with that cold broke face, they torn around the world, then they going no place, my KRS One moves at its own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do
you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Do you think they really ready for you? Nah. Do you think that there'll be many of you? Nah. Do you really think they ready for you? Nah. Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals, what a spectacle, they get mad when I say I and God are identical, you better get on your knees and praise them, these conspiracy theory rappers, I'll blaze them too, ooh. Deja vu, you seen this all before me, slaying your crew, I'm known by all the kids, I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did, people don't stop calling Chris for gigs, cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid, me getting bullshit, I can't even count all the dough this month I did, from coast to coast, we roasting toast, I'm hot, me and the ice can't get close,
do
you think they really ready for you now? There'll be many of you now. Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they're really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they're ready for you now? Revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame, but the airwaves is a shame, and the public don't know who to blame, so they blame rappers like we are insane, like we are to blame for society's pain, like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame, but we stuck in the past, can't see the change.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see by the dawn? So proudly we hailed at the twilight land gleaming. Through broad stripes and bright stars, through so gather.
The man you're about to see in here, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, girl, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Lift every voice and sing, till it in heaven rain. Ring with the harmony, oh, let it be. Let our rejoice and rise high. Love as we go and see ya.
Did you hear that sound? Well, that's the sound of back pain. Are you tired of nagging and persistent back pain? Whether you're suffering from a chronic condition or a recent injury, don't fret. Chiropractic has proven to be a natural and holistic alternative to pain medications and surgical procedures. Visit Dr. Todd Tucker at our Water Tower location on Chicago's Magnificent Mile for a free consultation and exam. Call 888-535-2381 to get started with your personalized treatment plan. That's 888-535-2381. Call now.
Tired, stressed out, or just need me or we time? Then Phoenix Risen, Baltimore's exclusive bed and breakfast, is the place for you. Phoenix Risen offers an unforgettable, rejuvenating experience with exquisite guest rooms. Find peace and calm in the Sedona Room or Haitian Room, or relax in front of a marble fireplace in the Serengeti Room. Call 410-462-2692 today to schedule your escape to Phoenix Risen. Visit us online at phoenixrisen.com.
In this, her first romance novel, State of Ecstasy, Jew Ephraim finds passion on the lush island of Martinique. Reminiscent of the works of Clépas and Lawrence, Jew Ephraim's rich emotional landscape delivers an achingly accessible complexity that makes State of Ecstasy steamy, provocative, and fresh, and its author a forceful new voice who brings an entirely new level of heat to romance. With her soon-to-be-released paranormal novel, Ephraim is giving us a brand new insight into this genre. Find her books on Amazon, iTunes, and wherever books are sold.
I'm listening to every lesson.
Till I'm on, nigga.
If you would like to advertise your business or product on Dime Piece Video, the number one independent music video source, please phone 1-800-735-4151 or contact us now at DimePieceVideo.com, a convenient viewer-friendly DVD magazine that has repeat use throughout the month.
What up, Sears up short, Dale Neal, Filthy Rockwell, brought niggas up, taught niggas what, flossin' with young, heartless and dumb.
When were you last on an amazing vacation? I'm Tracy Lewis, leisure travel specialist with Pogo World Travel, and I'm here to tell you that you don't have to go it alone when planning the vacation of a lifetime. So the next time you're looking for expert advice on that perfect vacation, you've got Pogo World Travel every step of the way. Visit our website at gowithpogo.com today and find out why they say, go with Pogo World Travel and discover your dream of vacation come true.
Partners in Community Building focuses on credit building, financial literacy, and home ownership for residents throughout Chicago and Illinois. All of our services are free. Call 312-328-0873 to get additional information on our homeownership counseling, rental assistance, Cook County foreclosure mediation, and small accessible repairs for seniors programs. PCIB is a HUD-certified nonprofit counseling agency committed to addressing the housing needs of all people. Call 312-328-0873 to schedule an appointment or visit us at www.pcibchicago.org.
For true inspiration, check out singer, songwriter, and radio personality Sylvia Fedrick. Sylvia, your sister under God's construction, brings to you her best in Christian contemporary gospel tunes, and they are available for download at www.sangsyl.com. That's SANGSYL.com. Or you can visit her profile at Chicago Black Business Network. For bookings, call Sassy Michelle at 512-914-4221.
Want to learn the secrets of the wealthy? Do you think that the wealthy sell their gold and silver, or do they buy gold and silver? Learn to create wealth, collect wealth, and preserve wealth for you and future generations. Find out how you can acquire free silver every month. Visit goldandsilverplan.com. That's goldandsilverplan.com. What you don't know can keep you struggling financially. What you know can change your life. Be in the know. Visit goldandsilverplan.com today.
Hey, you want more money in your pocket, right? Savers are losers, unless you save like the rich and beat inflation. The secret? Save the right kind of money. Pure, solid, 24-karat gold or silver for as little as 20 bucks a week, direct from the mint. Don't spend money. Exchange bad money for good money. Start today at SaveMetalMoney.com. That's SaveMetalMoney.com. The chains of slavery in the modern world are not forged with links of iron, but with the bonds of limiting ideas and debt.
Be in business for yourself, but not by yourself. Team up with a company voted the 57th most promising by Forbes. With no money to collect from your customers, no credit checks, and no cost for you to join. Visit electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288. That's electricmoneyteam.com, 773-980-9288.
Hi there, I'm the X-Man, Xavier Paul. I'm a national network voiceover talent. You've heard my voice represent hundreds of brands and businesses for the past 15 years. Well, now it's your turn. I understand how important it is to promote your business or event in the right way. That starts with quality radio spot production and the nation's top voiceover talent. You might wonder, how do I get started? What's the best approach? What voice talent do I use? And most importantly, can I do it affordably? That's why I created CoolVoiceRadio.com. I take you to the finish line, giving you everything you need to advertise effectively on the radio. I'll help you create your concept, write your spot, even choose your music and cast your voice talent and get it aired on the radio. Now that's cool. Email me today at info@coolvoiceradio.com or call 646-326-7800 because nothing beats the right sound.
Thank you.
Intriguing stories of 2013 with the health care. We had the showdown with Syria. Oh, yeah. And we have the L.A. cop killer. Let's take a look at 2013 for a second.
Back down into Los Angeles now to our newsroom on the west side of the city where Trace Gallagher is monitoring developments. Trace, this manifesto from this suspect who's targeting cops, it's stunning.
It is stunning, Shep, and it says he wants to kill cops because he believes cops ruined his name when they fired him and accused him of lying. Now, he acknowledges that he will not be alive when his name is cleared, but then again, police have no intention of clearing it. They think that he is a cold-blooded killer. Dorner says the L.A. cops are more racist today than they were during the Rodney King era. And when it comes to killing them, he wants to start small, get bigger, using their tactics. He writes, and I'm quoting here, "You are aware that I have always been the top shot, highest score, an expert in rifle qualifications in every unit I've been in. I will utilize every bit of small arms training, demolition, ordnance, and survival training I've been given." Police say they believe him because they trained him. He started with the L.A. Police Department, Shep, 8 years ago today.
Wow. Now, Trace, I've read this thing, and he talks about Wolf Blitzer and Anderson Cooper and Willie Geist from NBC. It's bizarre.
A lot of people on television, he talks about politics, Hillary Clinton and George W. Bush. He talks about a lot of pop culture, Shep, and more importantly, he names the people on the Los Angeles Police Department, 40 names in all, and none of them are being made public. Everybody in the manifesto is now getting extra protection. In fact, one of the police officers who was shot and wounded today was actually protecting a target named in that manifesto. Dormer says he wants the police and their families killed, saying, again, quoting here, "Suppressing the truth will lead to deadly consequences for you and your family. There will be an element of surprise where you work, live, eat, and sleep." Dr. Keith Ablo says he's apparently lost his empathy. Listen.
He's now devoid of that, and so he is like a runaway train. He's capable in a terrible way of inflicting awful suffering and feeling nothing because he has severed himself from his feelings.
I just want to mention they are still searching snow tracks in the Big Bear Mountain, Shep. The sun sets in about 40 minutes. They're expecting snow and rain up there tonight with a low temperature
of about 20 degrees.
Our coverage continues throughout the evening with the help of Trace and up on Big Bear. Thanks. That manifesto references a man named James Usura, calling him a great friend and attorney. We spoke with James today, our colleagues did here at Fox News, and he said he'd not talked to the suspect in about 4 years. The chief Fox Sports correspondent, Jonathan Hunt, with more on this guy. Any insight from him?
Yeah, we spoke to James Usura at some length today, Shep, by phone. We talked to him about how he first learned about all of this that was happening with his old friend, Christopher Dorner, and he told us that when he first found out, he was just stunned.
I'm just befuddled, absolutely befuddled. You know, no one expects to come to work and have an email from a reporter from the Los Angeles Times telling me that I'm mentioned in a manifesto and that someone who I consider a friend is, you know, has gone on a killing spree or allegedly gone on a killing spree. So I was absolutely befuddled and shocked.
James Usura attended University of Southern Utah and played football there with Christopher Dorner. They both had pretty stringent political views, he said. They used to argue a lot about those politics, but he said of Christopher Dorner, he never saw a hint of a violent nature.
He seemed very rational and, you know, articulate and intelligent and well-reasoned. Nothing about his behavior in my experience suggested that he was violent in any fashion or that he was, unreasonable or would take such drastic type steps.
Now, we wrapped up the conversation by asking Mr. Usura what his message would be to his old friend Christopher Dorner. Listen.
My message to him would simply be turn yourself in and get this situation resolved. Enough damage is done. My thoughts and prayers go out to the people who have been affected by this most intimately and the families who have been devastated by this. And so, my message to Mr. Dorner would simply be turn yourself in and put an end to this.
Now, talking of how this might end, Christopher Dorner wrote in that so-called manifesto of his friend James Usura, quote, "I'm sorry I'll never get to go on that moose and bear hunt with you. I love you, bro." Certainly doesn't sound, Shep, like a man who is planning to see any of his old friends ever again.
No, he clearly is not. Jonathan Hunt continuing our coverage.
Thank you. Christopher Dorner's time with the LAPD was relatively short. He was with the department less than 5 years. He also served in Iraq and was in the Navy Reserve. KCAL9's Andrea Fujii is live in La Palma, where the gunman lived with his mother and sister. And Andrea has a closer look now at the key points in Dorner's career. Andrea.
Well, Lena, a neighbor here tells me that she saw Dorner here outside his mother and sister's home here in La Palma just a couple of days ago. Prior to that, she hadn't seen him for years. Now, I took a closer look at Dorner's manifesto to try and get a sense of why he started this rampage. In his multi-page manifesto, ex-LAPD officer Chris Dorner explains his outrage and writes about what he'll do to clear his name after exposing a culture, he says, of lying and racism at the LAPD. He joined the LAPD in February 2005. In July of 2006, he was deployed to Iraq with the Navy. He returned to the LAPD in July of 2007. He says in August of 2007, he accused an LAPD officer of using excessive force on a suspect. In 2008, his accusations were heard in an internal hearing, where he was found to have lied. He was relieved of duty in June of 2008 and terminated in January of 2009. In October of 2011, Dorner appealed his termination, but lost. In December of last year, records show he defaulted on his home in Vegas, and his service as a U.S. Navy Reserve was terminated just days ago. In the manifesto, Dorner also recounts officers who he accused of racism, using the N-word, but they were never punished. Dorner threatens, "The LAPD has suppressed the truth, and it has now led to deadly consequences." Neighbors say he lived on and off with his mother and sister in La Palma, seen here, until a few years ago. One neighbor who didn't want to go on camera says she hadn't seen him for a while until earlier this week, when she says he stopped by. She insinuates, maybe, to say his goodbyes. Other neighbors say they never would have suspected him of such violence.
He was always gentle and say hello and just wave.
And so far today, there has been no activity outside his mother's home here, but we are told that undercover officers are in the area. Reporting live in La Palma, Andrea Fujii, KCAL 9 News.
All right, Andrea. We're
talking, of course, here about
Christopher Dorner. Where is he? What's going on? What's in the past? And you're getting an interesting reaction and some interesting people you've talked to.
I have, but I wanted to just kind of give you an update that I'm getting from my sources in terms of what the current concern is in terms of where Christopher Dorner is. The next place that law enforcement is going to really focus on is the potential of an attack on where any of the funerals may be for any of the people who have been murdered by him, because that is going to be a high target place where it could have a collection of people who are on Dorner's list. So if he is still on the loose, it's going to be unprecedented amount of security. That's what I'm hearing from law enforcement briefings. I want to make sure I gave you the news, because I know that we do news here.
Yes, we do. There are 40 units protecting families right now.
Right.
Now you'll have the funerals. The funerals are a high target area. But we all know what Christopher Dorner looks like. They all know what he looks like, so he can't go, unless he's disguised, into the funeral, right?
Well, I mean, right now he's been able to utilize the elements of surprise, his training, his knowledge. He undoubtedly knows how high-security funerals, law enforcement funerals are done and conducted. He'll know how to potentially stake out a site beforehand or how to utilize the, you know.
But they know that he knows.
Right.
So
that's the game that's going on right now.
And he's by training as a sniper, among other things. They'll certainly be checking every angle, every rooftop, every whatever. It's not just a movie. This is real life.
That is. But I just wanted to give you the latest there. And I know, and the other half of what I've been looking at right now has been reaction. I know that Lisa's been looking at it in terms of Facebook, and we've been getting a ton of reaction here into the station. And most notably, people from law enforcement with law enforcement history wanting, not condoning. Mm-hmm. And we want to be very clear that I personally don't condone any
don't
behavior.
Have to say that,
I know, and no one does. Yes. However, there is this light being shined on this issue of, you know, is there any truth and veracity as to what Dorner has said in his manifesto? And I've been looking at the documents, and I think that there has been, you know, we are becoming a place right now, and we'll hear from some of these people who have come to me saying, listen, racism is pervasive in LAPD. We have not improved as much as we've wanted to since Rodney King. There is a code of silence. You can't report your supervisors. Those themes are themes that are out there, and they can't be just dismissed while we're looking for him.
Is there any police department that functions in this country that doesn't have a code of silence?
I have not seen it. I think it's an element and an aspect of law enforcement.
Yeah.
But I think
And part of it is very bad, and part of it brings cohesion, because you're looking out for each other.
Right. I mean, and one of the things that I've talked to some of these officers about is, you know, on the face, LAPD seems to be very diversified. I mean, I've worked with every different type of ethnicity.
Two African-American police chiefs in the last 15 years.
Right. So, that part was surprising me, to think, you know, racism is as pervasive as it is when there is so much ethnicity within the department itself and from every level. But there are people who will say that it is still run, the decisions at the top still are an old boys club, and that racism is still prevalent, and you can't report anything, because if you do, various repercussions will happen. From, you know, one of the repercussions that I've been hearing is, okay, if you report something, you don't want to be that cop that then calls for backup, because guess what? Backup's not going to come to help you. And this hazing stuff that we heard about that, you know, has still exists. So these are things that we're looking at. Of course, it doesn't condone anything in any way.
It's a big city police department, and yeah, there are all kinds of issues. I said earlier, in other societies, men self-immolate. They burn themselves on the steps of the police department or the courthouse to make their point. They take their own lives to get the attention focused on the issue.
Well, it's like the suicide bombers. Yes. I mean, I wish that
I'm saying those people aren't like the suicide bombers.
Right. Yes.
They're killing themselves to make the point.
True.
That's one way of making the point, rather than killing innocent family members.
Right. Well, and why didn't Chris Dorner call me and say, I would love the news to expose this? Why didn't he send the package to Anderson Cooper before he started killing anybody?
Because you're not dealing with an emotionally balanced mind, quite obviously. Read the manifesto.
Right.
There are points in the manifesto where you say, that makes a lot of sense. And then why did he put... But we are discussing, as Chief Beck said, whatever you feel about the police department, what Chief Beck said, you're talking about a homicide guy here.
That's right.
We're starting to quote his philosophy.
That's right. And also, it should be noted that there are a lot of fantastic, wonderful police officers.
Yeah,
and this is not necessarily everybody, but it can be true of someone's experience.
All right, you folks are all weighing in, by the way, on Facebook. So if you go to our Facebook, what is the address here?
It's Fox LA.
Fox LA Los Angeles on Facebook. You go ahead and weigh in what you hear what Robin is saying here. So go to our Facebook page, like us, as we say, and we want to hear what you have to say. We're actually looking at these things and getting some sense of the tenor of how people are reacting.
I'm reading them.
Yeah. That was a big story during the 21-3 area. Let me take one quick break. Be back 1 second.
All this time, I couldn't shake your memory. And I never knew the sweetest love was the first. So what am I supposed to do about this curse? Oh, baby, I've got you to blame. And I'm calling, calling at your name. Oh, he was so
I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit me, bop the bop, bop it out of be bop, bop the bop. Yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Sound good, yeah. Saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3.
That was the big story also. last year. Also, the big story was the verdict. What verdict? So many verdicts out there. Well, you know the Trayvon Martin verdict. Big court case and all of that. You know how it went down. Matter of fact, it sounded something like this.
Black in Time Enterprises, celebrating who we are by honoring who we were.
Well, maybe not.
Will Wilfred Robinson, please come forward.
They got to him, too.
Wilfred Robinson?
Wilfred. Yes, Mama? You want to do what's right, and I want you to. But I want you to be a man. So you be a man right now. And from now on, no matter what happens, you'll be a man for the rest of your natural life.
Wilfred Robinson? Well, is he here or not? Now, did you know this boy, Nathaniel Hamilton?
Yes, sir. I knew Cornbread all my life, ever since I was a real little guy.
And on the date in question, did you see this occurrence?
Yes, sir.
Where were you?
In front of the store.
Which store?
Mr. Fred's store.
All right, Wilfred. Now you go ahead in your own words and you tell us what you know. Don't you start at the beginning and tell us everything you know.
Well, it all started when me and Earl was watching Cornbread and the other big guys play basketball. Then it started to rain. And then we all ran down to Mr. Fred's store. Mr. Fred, he was mad at having all those kids in his store. So he began to yell in. Pretty soon it was just Cornbread, me and Earl. And then Cornbread brought us each a pop. You know, he was always good to us. And he bought one for himself. And then One Eye came in.
Beg your pardon, did you say One Eye?
Yes, sir. Everybody out there knows One Eye.
I see. Go on, son.
Well, then Cornbread said that he had to get moving. So he bought another pop for himself to drink at home. And then we said that he ought to wait until it stopped raining. But he said no, and he had to get on home. And then, me and Earl, we got to arguing. We's always arguing as to how fast Cornbread could run home. And I said, maybe 10 seconds. And Cornbread laughed and said, no, about 45 seconds. And then we made sort of a bet. Then me and Earl and Mr. Fred and One Eye went out under the awning with Cornbread. Cornbread took off with his basketball under one arm and his orange pop in the other hand. Boy, you should have seen how he ran. Cornbread ran. Didn't even look like he was moving. He could sure run. And boy, was he moving. And then, me and Earl, he gets to counting. While Cornbread's running, you know, and a one, and a two. And Cornbread's pumping away, and it's raining, and Cornbread's racing down the block. And then those two cops, they run into the street. And it looks like they yelled something, but I couldn't tell what it was, because there was that garbage truck grinding away. Anyhow, those two guys, they had out their guns, and they shoot. And they shoot Cornbread. Then he was dead. They killed Cornbread, and he wasn't doing nothing. All he was doing was he was just going home.
I don't know who's lying, but somebody is.
Kid's got to be lying.
Counsel, do you have any questions?
Just one. Wilfred, Do you know anything about Cornbread belonging to a gang?
No, sir. He didn't belong to no gang. Didn't have to. Besides, he was always playing basketball. Sometimes at night, when it was quiet, I could hear the bamming and bamming of that basketball right up against that backboard. And I knew it was Cornbread. Because it couldn't be nobody else.
No witness. Trayvon never gave his cousins the Skittles. Mr. All-Star game, didn't see another dribble. And George Zimmerman wasn't even arrested.
arrested. The message is only white life is protected in America.
Crying. We were in the kitchen. I heard the crying. It was a little boy. As soon as the gun went off, the crying stopped. I firmly believe this was not self-defense.
Late breaking this noon, more pressure being put on the Sanford Police Department after the shooting of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin. Thanks for joining us. I'm Sion Rhodes. That teenager's family and two witnesses urging police to arrest Neighborhood Watch Captain George Zimmerman today. West 2's Gail Pascal Brown live in Sanford. And Gail, the witnesses say police have not been listening to what they're saying.
Yeah, they say they also have tried to tell their story more than once. The bottom line here, the attorneys for the family, Trayvon Martin's family, says if the Sanford Police Department continues to say that one of the witnesses' statements were inconsistent, he will assist in helping file a complaint against the department involving witness tampering, obstruction of justice, and witness intimidation.
This is not something that you see every single day. To me, it's been so hard to realize them. Right there, it was a body. I never been seeing a body in my life.
Selma Mora Lamila and her roommate, Mary Kutcher, are two witnesses Sanford police questioned in the shooting death of Trayvon Martin on February 26. The two say they were in their kitchen of their townhome at the Retreat of Twin Lakes in Sanford when they heard the whining of a child. Selma ran to the back of the porch and saw a man identified as George Zimmerman. She asked him three times what happened.
Third time I said, what's going on right there? He said, just call the police.
She said George Zimmerman walked nervously around the body. Police say Mary Kutcher's statements to the press were inconsistent with sworn testimony and were consistent with information George Zimmerman gave of self-defense.
My point was is that I feel it was not self-defense because I heard the crying, and if it was Zimmerman that was crying, Zimmerman would have continued crying after the shot went off.
Mary Kutcher says she attempted to go to the police multiple times.
Multiple people had my phone number, and not one person called me back. The only thing I saw that night, I heard the crying. We were in the kitchen. I heard the crying. It was a little boy. As soon as the gun went off, the crying stopped. Therefore, it tells me it was not Zimmerman crying.
But this whole situation is a nightmare. And I don't understand why this man has not been arrested, at least charged, and let a judge and jury decide if he's guilty.
The family's attorney wants federal investigators to look into the teenager's murder, adding the whole world is watching to see how this is going to conclude.
We want an arrest. How many nights do they have to go to bed knowing that the killer of their son is walking around free?
Thank you very much.
The family's attorney says he does not trust the Sanford Police Department, nor the state for that matter. He is sending out a letter today to the United States Attorney General Eric Holder, asking for a federal investigation. I'm Gail Pascal Brown, live in Orlando for West 2 News.
And now, still more major news. An exclusive interview with the woman who heard a Sanford vigilante gun down a teenager on February 26th.
Sanford police have said George Zimmerman's claims of self-defense kept them from arresting him. And now, 10 days later, he's still free. That's fueling outrage around Central Florida and the nation. Channel 9's Darlene Jones has been breaking new developments on this story from the beginning. And she talked to the people who really know what happened. She leads off our team coverage with that exclusive interview tonight. And Darlene, police only took a 2 or 3 sentence statement from this woman. How long did you talk to her?
Vanessa, I spent 30 minutes with her on camera, and she told us her entire story. After we heard her out, we reached out to Sanford Police here at headquarters, who told us they had been swamped with media requests and warned us we might not hear back from them today.
The cry stopped as soon as the gun went off, so I know it was the little boy.
Mary Kutcher said that cry for help got her attention the day 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was shot and killed in her backyard by George Zimmerman, a neighborhood vigilante. Until now, she's ignored repeated attempts by national and local media to share what she saw, partially out of fear.
So we said everything okay, and he just looked at us. And Selma asked him again, what's up? What's going on? Everything okay? And he just said, call the police. Kind of nonchalantly, like, leave me alone.
According to this partial police report, Kutcher is one of 6 eyewitnesses Sanford police took a statement from that night. Kutcher said it was short and police never questioned her in detail until after she repeatedly reached out to them.
Blew us off. And I called him back again and I said, I know this was not self-defense. There was no punching, no hitting going on at the time, no wrestling.
Kutcher believes whatever confrontation there was, it ended before they got to her backyard, and she believes Zimmerman continued to chase Martin as he tried to get home. Police said Zimmerman had a bloody nose and blood on the back of his head, and he told police he was yelling for someone to help, but no one would. Kutcher believes even if Martin got the best of Zimmerman, it's no excuse to kill an unarmed teenager half his size.
I assumed he's going to be arrested. Common sense will tell you. And he wasn't.
As I said, we spent an hour with her, 30 minutes of that on camera at 6, why she decided to speak out now. Reporting live in Seminole County in Sanford, Darlene Jones, Channel 9 Eyewitness News.
Now, Sanford police pointed to a state statute for not making an immediate arrest, and they sent us a copy of the law entitled Justifiable Use of Force. But our legal analyst reviewed the statute, and it says if Zimmerman was told by 911 to not confront Martin and did anyway, the statute is not on his side.
The use of deadly force in this instance was unlawful, and a valid arrest could have been made.
Bill Schaefer also says that ultimately an arrest could be made and likely should be made. Then the state would decide if the charges stick.
Under the facts of this case, as we know it, it appears that it was an abuse of discretion for Sanford not to effect an arrest and send it to the state attorney's office.
Sanford police have said there was no probable cause for an arrest of Zimmerman, but again, it is now in the hands of the state attorney's office.
Today, hundreds of people rallied at a Sanford church calling for the shooter's arrest.
Justice for Trayvon! Justice for Trayvon!
Close to 400 people showed up alongside pastors from around the country. They want the 911 audio released or George Zimmerman's arrest within the next 2 weeks. If not, they'll move forward with plans for a march and rally at the next city commission meeting. We're still going over our interviews with those protesters, and in 30 minutes, we'll show you what a city commissioner told them she wants done with the Sanford police chief.
Tell me.
You can depend on eyewitness.
If you're 17 and you wearing a hoodie, you're on the phone talking to your shorty. Make no mistake, there's one like you in every city. You know the story. He gon' creep up from behind, have you leave Earth before your time. By the time Popo show up, he gon' say he was so scared that he shot you up.
He could've been the next president. He could've been the next Steve Jobs. He could've been the next astronaut. So one day we get justice.
Neighborhood watcher.
If you 17 with a hoodie on, watch out for the neighborhood watcher. If you at the right neighborhood at the wrong time, neighborhood watcher. This might be your last call to your girlfriend, the neighborhood watcher. Yeah. And I feel for you if you 17. If you're 17, you should learn the law. Fight with your mind, stronger than arms. Make no mistake, there's one like you on every block, in every country. So let's unite and become one gang. Block the bridges and the tunnels if they don't understand. He could have been the next astronaut. Someone said we get justice. We won't stop. Cause the man he killed, he called him a fool. But how an enemy don't come to a gunfight with no guns to draw. The young and that's when his blood spilled. Consider him a bandit. But how a bandit wrestled you to the floor and he didn't pull his ratchet. You need to stop it. Neighborhood watcher.
Extended coverage of the state versus George Zimmerman. I'm Jason Guy alongside Meredith McDonough. Right now, Trayvon Martin's parents are about to speak. Let's listen in.
We're here to make a brief statement as we formally begin trial today. A murder trial is a very emotional matter, but Trayvon's parents understand that the jury will have to hear all of the evidence to base their verdict on that evidence. We think that this is a simple case. There are two important facts in this case. Number one, George Zimmerman was a grown man with a gun. And number two, Trayvon Martin was a minor who had no blood on his hands. Literally, no blood on his hands. There was none of George Zimmerman's DNA found on Trayvon Martin's hands or underneath his fingernails. We believe that the evidence is overwhelming to hold George Zimmerman accountable for killing Trayvon Martin. As these former proceedings began, that Tracy and Sabrina, over the last year and a half, have fought so hard to get to, we understand that now it is time for the jury to do their duty and base the verdict and their decision on the evidence, the instructions of the court, and the law. At this time, Ms. Sabrina Fulton will address you, and then Mr. Tracy Martin.
I'm here today as Trayvon Martin's mother. As I have been every day, I will be attending this court and to try to get justice for my son. I ask that you pray for me and my family because I don't want any other mother to have to experience what I'm going through now. Thank you.
Good morning. As the court proceedings continue today, we as a family look and cherish and hold on to the memories that Trayvon left us with. As we enter the courtroom today and seeking justice for our son, we hold on to his smile, which strengthens us, and we ask that you all continue to pray for us. Thank you.
Thank you.
White, black, I was raised to be equal to anyone. Listening to you, you are so precious. I just can't believe it. I am shocked. You're scaring me.
What is he saying that you have a problem with? What is he saying that you have a problem with?
What scares us is I think we hear violence.
Thank you. Don't know what the fuck it is you talking about.
I'm so scared to go out in the world next year because I was never a prejudiced person until I'm listening to you. It's really scary hearing what you're saying. I'm very scared.
What is he saying that you have a problem with? What is he saying that you have a problem with?
What scares us is I think we hear violence.
Thank you. Don't know what the fuck it is you talking about.
Peace, quiet, and good order will be maintained in our city to the best of our ability. Riots, melees, and disturbances of the peace are against the interest of all our people and therefore cannot be permitted.
The jury found that they were all not guilty, not guilty, not guilty,
We've been
not guilty,
all
not
along,
guilty.
Chris.
What did you think of George Zimmerman?
I think George Zimmerman is a man whose heart was in the right place, but just got displaced by the vandalism in the neighborhoods and wanting to
catch these people so badly that he went above and beyond what he really should have done. But I think his heart was in the right place. It just went terribly wrong.
Do you think he's guilty of something?
I think he's guilty of not using good judgment. When he was in the car and he called 911, he shouldn't have gotten out of that car. But the 911 operator also, when he was talking to him, kind of egged him on. I don't know if it's their policy to tell them what to do, not to get out of the car, to stay in their car. But I think he should have said, stay in your car, not can you see where he's gone.
Do you feel George Zimmerman should have been carrying a gun?
I think he has every right to carry a gun. I think it's everybody's right to carry a gun, as long as they use it the way it's supposed to be used and be responsible in using it.
George Zimmerman obviously did not testify, but his testimony essentially was brought into the trial through those videotapes, a number of videotapes, so that he walked police through a reenactment of what he said happened.
Mm-hmm.
How important were those videotapes to you?
I don't really know, because, I mean, watching the tapes, there's always something in the back saying, is it right? Is it consistent? But with all the evidence of the phone calls and all the witnesses that he saw, I think George was pretty consistent in what and told the truth, basically. I'm sure there were some fabrications, enhancements, but I think pretty much it happened the way George said it happened.
When George Zimmerman said that Trayvon Martin reached for his gun,
mm-hmm.
though there was no DNA evidence,
mm-hmm.
And the defense said, well, had testimony in, well, it could have got washed off in the rain or the like, do you believe that Trayvon Martin reached for George Zimmerman's gun?
I think he might have. I think George probably thought that he did because George was the one who knew that George was carrying a gun. And he was aware of that.
You can't say for sure whether or not Trayvon Martin knew that George Zimmerman was carrying a gun.
No.
So you can't say for sure whether or not Trayvon Martin reached for that gun.
Right. But that doesn't make it right. I mean, it doesn't make, there's not a right or a wrong. Even if he did reach for the gun, it doesn't make any difference.
How so?
Well, because George had a right to protect himself at that point.
So you believe that George Zimmerman really felt his life was in danger?
I do. I really do.
Do you think Trayvon Martin threw the first punch?
I think he did.
What makes you think that?
Because of the evidence of on the tee, or on the sidewalk, where George says he was punched. There was evidence of his flashlight and keys there. And then a little bit farther down, there was a flashlight that he was carrying. And I think that's where Trayvon hit him.
So you think, based on the testimony you heard, you believe that Trayvon Martin was the aggressor?
I think the roles changed. I think George got in a little bit too deep, which he shouldn't have been there. But Trayvon decided that he wasn't going to let him scare him and get the one over up on him or something. And I think Trayvon got mad and attacked him.
Do you feel like you know for sure what happened in the altercation? And did the other jurors feel for sure that they knew what happened?
Nobody knew exactly what happened. I mean, it started at one point and ended at another point. Witnesses said they heard left to right movement. Other witnesses said they heard right to left movement. But the credible witnesses said they heard left to right movement. So whatever happened, I think the punch came, and then they ended up in front of in the back of the house. I don't think anybody knows.
When the defense, in their closing argument, played that animation of what they believe happened,
mm-hmm.
did you find that credible?
I found it credible. I did.
What did you think of the testimony of Trayvon Martin's mother and father? Did you find them credible?
I think they said anything a mother and father would say, just like George Zimmerman's mom and father. I think they're your kids. You want to believe that they're innocent, and that was their voice, because hearing that voice would make it credible, but that they were the victim, not the aggressor.
So, in a way, both sets of parents kind of canceled each other out in your mind?
They did, definitely. Because if I was a mother, I would want to believe so hard that it was not my son that did that or was responsible for any of that, that I would convince myself probably that it was his voice.
How critical, though, was it for you in your mind to have an idea of whose voice it was yelling for help? I mean, how important was that yell for help?
I think it was pretty important because it was a long cry and scream for help that whoever was calling for help was in fear of their life.
The prosecution didn't use the word racial profiling during the case.
Mm-hmm.
They used the word profiling.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that was worked out between the judge and the lawyers when the jury wasn't in the room.
Right.
Do you feel that George Zimmerman racially profiled Trayvon Martin? Do you think race played a role in his decision, his view of Trayvon Martin as suspicious?
I don't think he did. I think just circumstances caused George to think that he might be a robber or trying to do something bad in the neighborhood because of all that had gone on previously. There were unbelievable a number of robberies in the neighborhood.
So you don't believe race played a role in this case?
I don't think it did. I think if there was another person, Spanish, white, Asian, if they came in the same situation where Trayvon was, I think George would have reacted the exact same way.
It happened like right when the sun goes down completely, so it was really dark and there was no moonlight out because it had just rained and the only one porch light was on. I was walking my dog and I heard screaming when I walked outside, so I went to where I heard it and it was behind about 20 to 25 yards from behind my house, and I looked and I saw someone laying on the ground and I heard someone yelling for help, and then my dog, he got off the leash and I went to go grab him, and then when I grabbed my dog I heard a shot, and right when I heard the shot the screaming stopped. So I went inside and I told my sister and she called 911. The police arrived and I later found out that the person who got shot died. I'll think about what if I would have went over there if the person still would have got shot. No, I just think that sometimes people get stereotyped and I fit into this stereotype as the person who got shot.
We have breaking news tonight in the case of the unarmed black teenager shot dead by a Crime Watch volunteer in Florida.
Case out of Florida that has sparked so much controversy nationwide. The unarmed teen shot and killed by a local Community Watch member.
Zimmerman confessed to the shooting, pleading self-defense. The FBI is now investigating this as a possible hate crime.
Young Trayvon, only 17, barely even started living, same age as me. Your life has been the alarm for our people waking in dreams, making us all aware that not everybody is free, not everybody is equal, not everybody can see that we live in a world where racism dominates the scene. We dream hope for the best, though our motto is ignorance. The truth is too hard to swallow, so lack of knowledge is bliss. Thank you for being born, you live for us to see that even with our successes, our people were never free. Moved from plantations, enslaving us mentally, but now we finally see it, and that was your legacy. I never thought that a hoodie could be the cost of a life, but living is never nothing, I'm dying on the fight. I turn to look at the stars in the sky, knowing another brother's off is an angel from the sky. He was shot by the blood, but he's not out of pain. He lives and everyone's
fine. Come on, let the world say, come on. Yeah, that was, I ain't gonna say 2013 in advance, but we had that. Trayvon, we had the L.A. killer, and we also had health care. All that plays into point. With what we were All right, people, hold my phone. My bad. Now, I thought I had to sit up. I thought I had to sit up for my health care little click. But I didn't have it all plugged in now. Testing one. Oh, here we go. All right, now. Had the wrong mic on. Now, healthcare also was the biggest story in 2003, or the 2013, the 2013, 213, like I call it. And also healthcare. Let's deal with it now.
Only ran one block, but my shirt is soaking wet. Trying to see if we got him. Look down and my sweatshirt's red at the bottom. Didn't panic, but I still look cracked out. Yell to the homies that I'm blacked out.
Get up, man.
Walked up in the back of a tray. On my way to MLK. That's the county hospital, Jackson. When niggas die, overload scratch. In the trauma center. In my back is where the bullets entered. Yo, nurse, I'm getting kind of warm. Bitch still made me fill out the fucking form. Coughing up blood on my hands and knees. Then I heard, freeze, nigga, don't move, yo. I didn't do a thing. Don't wanna go out like my man's Rodney King. Still got gas. Internal bleeding as the bullets start to travel. Now I'm handcuffed. Being asked information on my gang affiliation. I don't bang, I like the dip line. And I'm a victim of neighborhood crime.
I see the other one who got shot. Who's got the gun with the carry?
No, man, don't know who it was, man.
Get a gang?
What does it matter, man? I'm shot.
I need to see an MD. And y'all motherfuckers giving me a third degree. Look at the weight room. It's filled to the rim like the county jail tape room. Nobody getting help. Since we post the hospital with men. Now I'm laid out. People stepping over me to get closer to the TV. Just like a piece of dog shit. Now I die on this nappy ass carpet. 1 hour done passed. Done watched 2 episodes of MASH. And when I'm almost through, they call my name and put me in ICU. Halfway dead. No respect and handcuffs to the bed. Now the drama starts. Cause the bullet must be just a hair from my heart. Then I began to ask kisses, just to get looked at by overworked physician. Had to chill, but my temperature's 103. Only got a band-aid and an IV. That's when I start cussing. Police said he asked me, who did the fuck?
Who did you get shot with?
22.
Who shot you?
I don't know who shot me.
Was it gangbangers?
Had to be.
Why, oh, why can I get help? Cause I'm black, I got to go for self. Too many black bodies at hospital housing. So at 10 p.m., I was.
Hello and welcome to Common Sense TV. I'm your host, the Doctor of Common Sense and the Junkyard Dog. They have indicted Jesse Jackson Jr. and his wife, and it is a tragic day in America. I mean tragic. This is a tragedy. Now, I don't understand why Jesse Jr. has to go to jail, because it's not his fault that the money was calling his name. I mean, the boy went to sleep, and when he went to sleep, the money woke him up and said, Jesse, rise and spend me. It wasn't his fault. I mean, if you ask his daddy, he'll tell you it wasn't Jesse's fault. Jesse Jackson Sr., could you explain to the folks what really happened Well, it's not Jesse's fault. Let me tell you, it's the white man making Jesse take the money. They put the money in front of Jesse. Jesse had to take the money. The money called his name at night. The money called his name when he traveled. The money made his mistress need that watch and other things. It's not Jesse's fault. I think we should sue the white man for making Jesse take the money. That's what we should do. Can't I get an amen? I'm sick of the oppression and suppression and rejection and subjection of the black man. Jesse is innocent. I'm telling you, the white man is to blame for putting the money in Jesse's hand. They knew he was bipolar. If he is bipolar, he very well can't be blamed for this. It's not his fault. White man need to stop oppressing the colored. We're still at the back of the bus. Jesse Jr. needs to get off because the white man put the money in front of him. Thank you, Jesse Jackson Sr. See, that's the mentality of the liberal mindset, especially Jesse Jackson. See, personally, I think it's the money's fault. Because Jesse Jackson Jr., the money should have known that he was going to steal it. You know, just like the gun calls people to shoot innocent people, we ban guns, we should ban money. That's the problem. If we had banned money, Jesse Jackson Jr. would never be in trouble if we just banned the money. No more money in America, damn it. Let's get money control. We start banning the money, we don't have to worry about the black man being oppressed by these white folks trying to force them to steal money. Now, let's ban money. I'm on a crusade. I'm going to get all the Hollywood actors and actresses to go on a crusade and make videos about how money is bad. We should ban it because it's causing people of color to steal the money. Now, we know they're not the only one. As a matter of fact, it's some white people that just stole some money, too. So I think, on that note, Jesse Jackson Jr. shouldn't have to go to jail because some white people got off, too. This is the logic I want to use to defend my client, Jesse Jackson Jr. His wife put a lot of pressure on him to keep up with the Joneses. And in order to keep up with the Joneses, he had to steal the money. How you think he's going to get his house redecorated if he don't steal the money? Now, you people are being unreasonable. As a matter of fact, he should get a bonus because he only sold $750,000. Now, that technically makes him a rich guy because Barack Obama said anybody making $250,000 or more was rich. So we're not going to get him on tax evasion and stealing the money. We're going to get him for being too damn rich. You need to be taxed, son, because you were stealing too much money and made yourself rich. And you know we are at war with the rich. Now, why aren't the media not saying anything about this rich, spoiled brat who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth? You know Jesse Jr. would not have been elected if it wasn't for his daddy. Now, come on now. This is nepotism. Now, Jesse was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He's a rich, spoiled kid. Why don't the media say this? He stole the money because he's spoiled and rich. His daddy had been ripping off. You know, his dad is a professional pimp. And he's been pimping, getting money for years. And then he, matter of fact, why did Jesse Jackson Sr. ever go to jail for any? I know that boy's got to have been done something to be stealing or something. It ain't fair for Jesse Jr. to go to jail and Jesse Sr. gets to stay out. As a matter of fact, let's make Jesse Sr. the sacrificial lamb for Jesse Jr. Come on, Jesse. You need to at least go to jail for your son. Take the sins of your son upon you, my brother. Jesse Jackson Sr., would you be the sacrificial lamb for you? Well, you know, I would be the sacrificial lamb, but it's not Jesse Jr.'s fault. It's the white man's fault, so therefore I can't be the sacrificial lamb. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to let you suppress, oppress, depress, or depress me. Not going to happen. You might as well get another sacrificial lamb. How about let's get a white man to be the sacrificial lamb for Jesse Jr.? That sounds like a winner to me. Can I get a amen? That's what I think the problem is. The white man made Jesse steal the money. Now let him off. Matter of fact, give him a couple of $1 million.
Jesse.
You're looking at the most hated man in U.S. politics. A man who stole almost $1 million from his campaign and blew it on, well, really cool stuff. Jesse Jackson Jr. And this video is about to get awesome!
We got Jesse Jackson Jr. in D.C.
Yes! It's the first time we've seen Jesse since he pled guilty to spending $750,000 of campaign funds on personal stuff, like...
a fur cape.
Multiple capes.
A mounted elk's head. A football signed by two American presidents.
$17,000 on cigars and other tobacco products.
Most importantly, a used Michael Jackson fedora.
In short, Jesse Jackson Jr. And on the streets of D.C., our brave photog asked the questions everyone wants to know.
Why the Michael Jackson fedora and not the glove?
I mean, come on. That's great.
And that's not all.
Where is the Michael Jackson fedora now, Jesse? Jesse, are you going to keep the Michael Jackson fedora or the Bruce Lee memorabilia?
He bought a bunch of Bruce Lee memorabilia as well.
We love him. This is amazing.
Yep.
Did you at least get to wear the Michael Jackson fedora, Jesse?
And finally!
Have a good one, Jesse.
Oh, that was actually pleasant. So what do you think about J3 now?
It's terrible, but he has made some epic choices in what he's bought.
It's stolen money.
Wait, where do you buy a fur cape?
Capes R Us?
Cape Town?
Okay. Cape Town.
Oh, that all sounds pretty cool.
You gotta love this a little bit harder.
Hate him.
Yeah, he's not a good guy.
But as far as
what he bought is fabulous.
So congrats, Jesse J. Jr. You're horrible, but you got style.
He got his Eddie Van Halen guitar.
Let that man free. Come on.
We're here this afternoon to discuss an unfortunate situation that we've seen far too often across the political landscape. Today, Jesse Jackson Jr. Pled guilty and accepted responsibility to participating in a 7-year conspiracy to defraud his political supporters of their campaign contributions, to the tune of nearly $750,000. Today, Jesse Jackson Jr. pled guilty and confessed to a variety of schemes, some of them simple, some of them sophisticated. But all of them had the same common purpose. All of them were designed to further finance his exorbitant lifestyle. The guilty plea today is so tragic because it represents such wasted potential. Jesse Jackson Jr. had the drive, the ability, and the talent to be the voice of a new generation. But he squandered that talent. He exchanged that instead to satisfy his personal whims and his extravagant lifestyle. He did acknowledge responsibility today. For that, he deserves credit. He did not seek to evade responsibility during this process. He did not make excuses. He came in early, he told the truth, and he saved the taxpayers the cost of a trial. But today is his day of reckoning. Jesse Jackson Jr. will face up to 5 years in prison. He will have a guideline range of 46 to 57 months. He will have to pay back the $750,000 that he stole, starting with forfeiting the furs and the guitars and the other celebrity memorabilia that he purchased. Today is his first step toward redemption. Today we also had Jesse Jackson Jr.'s wife, Sandy Jackson, former Chicago alderman, plead guilty as well. She pled guilty to filing false returns. As part of her plea, she acknowledged failing to report $600,000 in income from the years 2005 to 2011. She acknowledged using money from her alderman campaign account, as well as another political organization that she controlled, for her own personal benefit. She acknowledged receiving other sources of income to her company that were not reported. And she acknowledged spending money from her husband's campaign account on personal items. Sandy Jackson faces up to 3 years in prison. She has a guideline range of 18 to 24 months and will have to pay up to $168,000 in restitution. I want to now walk through the conduct that the individuals pled guilty to today. And if you look first on the right to the exhibit, you'll see there's a diagram, and it explains this scheme. For 7 years, Jesse Jackson Jr. and his wife undertook a variety of different methods to funnel money out of his reelection campaign. Most directly, the Jacksons used their campaign credit cards to run up over $580,000 in personal expenses. They bought everything from flat-screen TVs to fur coats to a fedora worn by Michael Jackson. They went to Disney World. They ate at four-star restaurants and financed their day-to-day living, purchasing things like toilet paper and a refrigerator with campaign funds. Sometimes Jesse Jackson Jr. did not use his campaign credit card and would instead simply spend money directly from his campaign account. Most notably, in 2007, he used campaign money to purchase a $43,000 gold-plated Rolex watch. At other times, Mr. Jackson went to great lengths to disguise his theft of campaign funds. He funneled about $100,000 in campaign money through either his wife's business or through one of his congressional staff members, using some of that money to renovate the $2 million Jackson home in DuPont Circle, Washington, D.C. In all, Jesse Jackson Jr. and his wife converted about $750,000 for personal gain. The nature of this spending makes clear that this was not a momentary lapse of judgment. This was not a short streak of impulsive behavior. Over 7 years, the Jacksons engaged in more than 3,100 transactions for their personal gain. It is clear that Jesse Jackson became convinced that his campaign account could be used to satisfy any personal whim that he had. Mr. Jackson's theft from his congressional campaign, however, was not sufficient to satisfy his lavish lifestyle. He also depended upon secret gifts of more than $75,000 from third parties that he often funneled through his congressional staff members or other people. And if you look on our left, you'll see a diagram that explains these transactions. For example, in 2009, he funneled cash gifts through one of his district staff members to buy a guitar that had been used by Michael Jackson and Eddie Van Halen. He also used that staff member and three other people to help pay off personal credit card debts. Keeping this enormous fraud and these cash gifts a secret required Jesse Jackson Jr. to repeatedly lie to the Federal Election Commission and to the U.S. House of Representatives on various disclosure forms. For example, when Mr. Jackson spent $1,500 of campaign funds on a porcelain collector's items from a Chicago museum, he told the FEC that the money was spent to rent out a room for a campaign fundraiser. When he spent $400 of campaign money at the Home Depot to buy supplies for his lawn, he told the FEC that the money was being used to buy equipment for his campaign office. Jesse Jackson Jr. lied many times over many years to hide this fraud from the government and, most importantly, from his constituents. It's important to remember the true victims of the Jacksons' crimes. Those victims are the American people who place their hopes and dreams in them as political officials. Those people listened as Jesse Jackson Jr. eloquently expressed their deepest aspirations. They cheered as he ascended to political office, and they prayed that his public service would somehow provide a brighter path for them. Those contributors were people of modest means, senior citizens on fixed income, auto workers, teachers, plumbers. They donated their hard-earned money so that he could, through his political movement, somehow better their lives. He betrayed their trust. He spent their money that was designed or intended to be used to further his elections on items of excess, as I'd explained, the Rolex watch, the fur coats, the Michael Jackson guitar. The people of Illinois' 2nd District and the American people deserve better from our political leaders. I hope that this prosecution serves as a cautionary tale for those who would seek to set aside their ideals and their integrity for personal gain. This sort of fraud is inexcusable, and it won't be tolerated, especially not in our nation's capital. I want to thank the many prosecutors from my office that worked on this case, Mike Atkinson, Matthew Graves, Catherine Connolly, Anthony Saylor, did a terrific job. I want to thank the outstanding investigators from the FBI, Washington Field Office, who investigated all these financial leads, interviewed so many witnesses. Again, outstanding work. And I want to thank the investigators from the IRS Criminal Investigative Service, who again did outstanding investigative work, especially on the Sandy Jackson tax fraud part of this case. Over the last few years, we have stood here with this team, and it's not been these same individuals, but it has often been U.S. Attorney's Office, FBI, and IRS. And we stood here many times in these sort of situations in both local and federal corruption investigations. Our organizations are working tirelessly to stamp out corruption in both D.C. and across the country. And I'm very proud of the results that they have obtained over the last few years.
A dramatic turn in the wheel of fortune for former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., pleading guilty to lavish abuse of campaign money and offering a tearful apology to his famous father. Here's ABC Senior Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas.
Today, Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. left court in disgrace, breaking months of silence.
It's not a proud day. I'm sorry I let everybody down.
The son of an iconic civil rights leader and one-time presidential candidate had been a rising star, even speaking at the 2008 Democratic National Convention. But today, Jackson was in court weeping as a convicted felon. He turned to his father to say, "I'm sorry." Jackson admitted to stealing $750,000 in campaign funds for personal gain. Memorabilia from Michael Jackson, Jimi Hendrix, and Bruce Lee. Furs, home furnishings, a Rolex watch worth $43,000.
Jackson now faces more than 4 years in prison as part of his guilty plea and likely will serve time.
Not a future Jackson or his father ever expected. Pierre Thomas, ABC News, Washington.
Topping our political ticker right now, this is just coming into the Situation Room, a dramatic statement from Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. repudiating his father's crude remarks about Senator Barack Obama, remarks caught on an open microphone. In his statement, Congressman Jackson says, "I'm deeply outraged and disappointed in Reverend Jackson's reckless statements about Senator Barack Obama, his divisive and demeaning comments about the presumptive Democratic nominee, and I believe the next president of the United States contradict his inspiring and courageous career." He then goes on to say this, "Reverend Jackson is my dad and I'll always love him. He should know how hard that I've worked for the last year and a half as the national co-chair of Barack Obama's presidential campaign. So I thoroughly reject and repudiate his ugly rhetoric. He should keep hope alive in any personal attacks and insults to himself." An extraordinary statement coming in right now from Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. And now, also just coming into the Situation Room, for the first time we have a formal statement from the Obama campaign reacting to Reverend Jackson's comments. I'll read it to you. "As someone who grew up without a father in the home, Senator Obama has spoken and written for many years about the issue of parental responsibility, including the importance of fathers participating in their children's lives. He also discusses our responsibility as a society to provide jobs, justice, and opportunity for all. He will continue to speak out about our responsibilities to ourselves and each other, and he, of course, accepts Reverend Jackson's apology." That statement coming in from the Obama campaign spokesman, Bill Burton, also.
Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. has been sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. Earlier this year, the son of civil rights leader Jesse Jackson pleaded guilty to using $750,000 in campaign funds to buy personal items. He told a federal judge in Washington that he misled the American people. Court papers say Jackson used the money to buy a Rolex, household appliances, and dinners out, just some of over 3,100 personal expenses on the list. Jackson's wife, Sandra, a former Chicago alderman, pleaded guilty to filing false federal tax returns and was sentenced to 1 year. Prosecutors say she spent the money on items including fur capes and parkas. Prosecutors sought less than maximum sentences for both Jacksons, recognizing that they have young children. Matt Friedman, Associated Press.
I still believe in the resurrection.
Former Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr. reacting after he's sentenced to 2.5 years in prison. Good afternoon. Both Jesse Jackson Jr. and his wife Sandy sentenced to federal prison time today.
Now, before that sentence was handed down, both of them gave tearful pleas for mercy. ABC 7's Ben Bradley was there for the sentencing, and as it was handed down, he joins us live once again from Washington, D.C. Ben?
Linda Allen, Jesse Jackson Jr. spoke more emotionally, powerfully, and tearfully than any public official I've seen hauled before a federal judge. But in the end, it was likely his decision to cooperate early and plead guilty that helped him more than any words he spoke in court today.
It could have been worse. Jesse Jackson Jr. sentenced to 2.5 years. Prosecutors wanted four.
I still believe in the power of forgiveness. I believe in the power of redemption. Today I manned up and tried to accept responsibility for the errors of my ways.
Jackson made a last-ditch attempt to spare his wife prison time. In court, he tearfully told the judge, "Give me her time. What she did was a subset of what I did, a culture I allowed to exist." The judge said no, saying the former Chicago alderman also enjoyed living large thanks to her husband's campaign fund, appliances for their home, furniture for the kids, furs, and trips.
This has been an extraordinarily difficult time for our family.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson, his wife, and other family members fought back tears as Jesse Jr. told the judge, "I also want to apologize to my dad and my mother because I am an example for the whole family." The former congressman revealed he prefers serving his time farther from his family, saying, "I asked for Alabama so I could be as far away from everybody as I could be for a while."
He is still recovering. Jesse has been very sick. This time a year ago, I really thought we may have lost him. I think he's strong enough now to accept the challenges put before him by the judge.
The judge did not dispute Jesse Jackson Jr.'s bipolar diagnosis, but did say defense attorneys simply didn't present much evidence of the illness's severity or Jackson's treatment.
She now is going to move forward into this period of time where she's going to be able to be with the children, get them through this difficult time, and rebuild her life.
Jesse Jr. also says he's looking forward, not back.
I still believe in the power of forgiveness. I believe in the power of redemption.
The judge has agreed to a Jackson family request to allow Jesse Jr. to report to prison first. He'll do that sometime after November 1st. He also has to pay back $750,000, the money that he stole from his campaign fund. Today in court, Jesse Jr. said he believes he will be able to pay that money back to the government. He says he hopes before he has to report to prison. That's latest live in Washington. Ben Bradley, ABC 7 News. Alan?
Ben, do we know when the Bureau of Prisons will decide where he will be serving the sentence?
Well, the judge agreed to a request that Jesse Jr. serve his time at the federal prison camp in Montgomery, Alabama. She's also recommending that Sandy Jackson serve her time at a women's facility in Florida. But those are just recommendations. It's the Bureau of Prisons that ultimately decides who goes where.
Right. Now, of course, that decision's still to come. We haven't heard that. All right, Ben, thanks so much for reporting live from Washington, D.C. Well, this has been a long road leading to this point for Jesse Jackson Jr. He was first elected to Congress back in December of 1995 after winning that special election to replace embattled Representative Mel Reynolds. His personal problems actually began to unravel in June of last year when Jackson took a medical leave from Congress. It was a month later that his office reported that he was being treated for a mood disorder. Then in August of last year, the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, said that Jackson was being treated for bipolar disorder. In November, sources revealed that Jackson was negotiating a plea deal with prosecutors who were investigating him as well as his finances. Then just a few weeks later, he resigned from Congress, citing health issues in a letter to House Speaker John Boehner. In that letter, he said that the constituents of the 2nd District deserve a full-time legislator in Washington, something that he could not be for the foreseeable future. And then it was in February of this year, federal charges filed against the former congressman and his wife, the former alderman, Sandy Jackson. 5 days later, they both pleaded guilty to the criminal charges against them. Linda?
And now to some background on the judge in this case. Judge Amy Berman Jackson has an extensive legal career. The Harvard graduate appointed as a United States district judge in March of 2011. And then prior to that, she was in private practice in Washington, D.C. as a member of Trout Cacheris. That is where she specialized in complex criminal and civil trials and appeals. And then from 1980 to 1986, Judge Jackson had served as an assistant United States attorney for the District of Columbia.
Well, prosecutors and Justice Department of...
Yeah.
It's a man's world, but check the girl with the Mac 11, 187. Hit the switch front, back, side to side, corner to corner. Fuck you a corner. Don't fuck around and get blown up, cause we got the West Side sold up. Ike and Tina, Marie and Donnie, ask for the Simpson, Clyde and Bonnie.
Jesse Jackson Jr. will find out that the fantasy's over for sure when the federal judge sentences him to prison. Either you can have the fantasy about Chicago as some sort of wonderful place where the politicians actually are about public service, or you can have the reality about a bunch of warlords cutting up the pie while we go further and further into devastating debt. Right? I suggest we have something called the Illinois Reality Association, right? Which sort of lets us realize they just spend money, they take care of themselves, and they treat the voters with thorough contempt. But the royals are ruthless to maintain those crowns upon their head. And I don't think he had the discipline, the ruthlessness, or the intelligence, the political intelligence. He's a smart guy. But he just didn't have what it took to make it in the game. All that promise that he had, rhetorical, the name, right? But he didn't take care of business. And if you don't take care of business in politics in Chicago, bad things happen. So Jesse Jackson Jr. and his wife show up in federal court today, crying, weeping, blubbering into the handkerchiefs. And all the tears that they shed couldn't put those stuffed elk heads back on the wall, and they couldn't put the $750,000 back. He received 30 months. She got a year in prison, 12 months, for stealing $750,000. Are you kidding me? Try stealing $7,000 from a bank. See what happens. Try stealing $2,000 from a gas station. See what happens. You're not going to be able to pick your prison. There won't be all that nonsense. When there's no money left, when people are out of work, when the debt on the state and on the city crushes us, and the federal government, you got to think of these elected officials. Their private conduct informs their public work. Okay? So if you can't tell the difference, if you went to law school, Mr. Jackson, she passed the bar. He's been in politics all his life. She's been in politics. Are you telling me that you didn't know that what you were doing was wrong?
Yeah. Man, okay. That Jesse Jackson boy knocks you off the spot. Okay. I'm going to leave it at that. That's a 213 in a nutshell. But how is 214 going to go down? You know it's about Jimmy to D.C., right? We know, but we know it's about that, right? So let's see what the 214. All right, what is this? Okay, what was this? I'm having a hard time here. Yeah, everything that went But let me go ahead and put what happened in the 214. Here we go.
Bobby Rush has been a congressman from the south side of Chicago for 11 terms. In 2000, Rush was facing a challenge in the Democratic primary from Barack Obama, then a state senator. During the campaign, Rush announced he was launching what he called the Rebirth of Inglewood Community Development Corporation. Its aim? To help revive the crime-plagued neighborhood and to give a leg up for high-technology jobs to, in Rush's words, economically disadvantaged students and the unemployed. The congressman and the phone company, SBC, said a big part of the plan would include creating what they said would be called the Bobby L. Rush Center for Community Technology, and SBC would donate $1 million to help. But the center never was built. Rebirth of Inglewood ended up being shut down. And the $1 million, Chuck Neubauer and Sandy Burgo from the Better Government Association broke the story in the Chicago Sun-Times.
We do know that they bought a building with the intention of building a tech center. We know that they hired an architect and paid him part of what he was owed. And the records show that they spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to build the tech center. But since it was never built, the records aren't clear on what that money really covered.
Congressman Rush blames the architect. He said the architect was trying to build a Taj Mahal in Inglewood with storefront money. The architect tells a different story. I mean, he says he didn't get his final payment, and that's kind of one of the reasons the project kind of slowed down. And he says the high cost of the project isn't his fault, that the problem was is that they bought an old dilapidated building which should have been knocked down, and to rehab it was really expensive. The building had remained vacant for like 5 years. And then in 2009, Rebirth, one of Congressman Rush's groups, sold it to the Wellness Center, another one of the congressman's groups. It was a sweet deal for the Wellness Center. The purchase price was $150,000. But basically, the Wellness Center has yet to pay Rebirth two-thirds of that. We asked the congressman if this was a sweetheart deal, and he says it was a sweetheart deal for the people of Englewood who now have a first-rate health facility.
And there's more troubles here for Bobby Rush. Laura Washington and the Sun-Times is predicting that he's going to retire. We can see. Let's wait and see. It is about Jimmy Lee to D.C. and 214. God is on our side. So let me go ahead and end the show. I'm not going to end the show with our number one song. But I'm going to play 2013, number one song on the underground. And then I'll be back in this moment.
Yeah, y'all know who it is. It's the Bull Q the Question. I'm on my mogul shit right now.
motherfuckers who I am. Cap with a T, nigga, hyphen, man. Better believe that hyphen, that. Put it in bold letters when you type in that. My cancer act with a counterman. Those are your notes with a cataract. Have you sweating, capping, feet for shit, I blow your cap and back. Go bizarre like D12. Ill, your music, speak, smell. Step in the rain and see Travis Blade drop like Miguel. Derail your whole squad, Big Sean, oh God. I'm tatted with a triangle to say I'm Luminati with one eye. Bring it back to my heritage, to my arrogance. And radio frequencies airing it. Comparing me to niggas they wish they had me with. Live from the underground like Harriet or Big Crit. Attracting girls with big hips, slim waisted, big lips, and big tits.
Charles Mack, you ain't been bragging.
Funny thing that I've been laughing, cause these niggas I've been tragic. Shoot the whip, they been whack. They say when I move the fastest. Too fast for some damn traffic. Hit no collision with my niggas. A bad decision is that tragic, nigga.
Yo, Trump just went in on that one. Now y'all know we got the boy Peter Jones on the rise. I know y'all been seeing him everywhere lately. I'm passing you the rock now, P. The people are watching. Can you deliver?
Can I deliver? Like, really? You gonna ask me that question? Is it my time to go now? Like, is it my time?
Here's your chance right now.
Hell yeah. When I get on the mic, I do that shit like hell yeah. When I throw them bowls like a ludicrous, like hell yeah. Cross me, nigga, get crucifix. I'm too legit for your duplicates. Can't measure up your ruler's thick. I'm the newest recruit here. When I know when I do here in the booth here. Dominate for the new year. Been lied about, but I'm the truth here. Common sense is coming. If the proposition is nothing. If you stopping this, you bugging. Only competition, my cousin. Can't fool of them niggas. Got a handful of them triggers. Blah, 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 blah. Rainstorming your niggas. See the green, I best the trail. Mistreated, he got me back. He bar for bar. Mess for that. Cue the question, girl. Roger that. Respect this flow, but I check. Yo ho, when a nigga bad with the decimals, no X and O's. Probably next thing up off on that web episode. I made it, I hate it, I'm overrated. I'm famous, I let the greatest debate it. Lyrically, I'm in the matrix, cause I'm the one. Yeah, Q. Ain't nothing more to it. Put some more beat on that joint.
Happy Kwanzaa for everybody that's in the building. Good night, may your God be with you. Dave ain't fair, but it sure is fabulous. You know, tomorrow, maybe.
I wish I had the time to tell you a story about a man called Shelly John. But I don't have that time tonight. But you gotta realize, if old John was here, after going through, he look back at that old muse and said, since I can't shout in your church, since I can't dance in your church, hold my muse. I feel like shouting right now. I come to tell somebody I feel like I'm praising, praising him. Well, well, help me out, y'all. Oh, I
feel like praising, praising him.
Everybody, now we're gonna go back home and sing it like we used to a long time. I'm gonna praise the Lord while I have a chance. You know, we didn't have a lot of music. I'm, oh, oh, oh.
I'm gonna-